On today's episode of The Good Word, the 76ers win a battle at MSG thanks to Tyrese Maxey. Evan Mobley showed why I call him Slim Duncan, and I have a theory on the Bucks and Doc Rivers. All that and producer John on today's episode.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is a solo show, y'all. We haven't done this in a while, but man, like, it is Wednesday morning, and if you're like me, you're equal parts tired and exhilarated. Remember those, John? Because John is here, of course. John, remember those old NBA promo campaigns? Not the I love this game ones. Those were in the 90s. Do you remember the ones in the 80s that has all the celebrities in it at the end of it that we can't really mention anymore? Because once was a dude who was a football player that did something really bad, and another one was like America's dad, and then he did something really crazy, and it was like NBA action. It's fantastic. Right. If you ever want to have a good time on YouTube, just go search NBA Action. It's fantastic. And you will see a whole bunch of, hey, I remember that guy. We used to be able to say his name in public. Right. That's what NBA Action was last night. It was fantastic, y'all. Like, seriously, I am tired. I am beat. But it was some great games last night. Like, John, when you watch games late in games, do you watch as a fan or do you watch like you are a pseudo coach?
It depends on if I'm watching the Dallas Mavericks or not. I usually try and watch as a pseudo coach. If I'm watching the Dallas Mavericks, sometimes that goes flying out the window. And occasionally I get so wrapped up in what's going on, it's so crazy that the coach stuff goes out the window and I just sit there going, oh my God, I can't believe that this is happening.
So the reason I asked that, John, is because with the Knicks last night, Knicks and Sixers in the Garden, game five, all the crazy people in New York, like we got Dan Devine and Jake Fisher, they both live in New York. But man, if I could cover a Knicks home playoff game, that would be excellent because those are crazy people, 20,000 crazy people.
Can I give you, I gave Dan this stat. I don't know if it made it into his Knicks article that he was writing off the game yesterday. The last time the Knicks clinched a series at Madison Square Garden
99?
Was against, yeah, in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Pacers in 1999. So it's been 25 years. I thought the roof was going to blow off that place, Vinny. I thought it was going to explode.
And that was the problem.
Yeah.
That's literally what happened when Deuce McBride hit that free throw line jumper with, 26 seconds left or whatever it was. You could tell it was equal parts relief and jubilation. You're up six with 26 seconds left. You're supposed to win the game. But in the words of Shaquille O'Neal in 2004, when Derek Fisher hit that crazy shot with 0.4 seconds left, one lucky shot deserves another. In this one, it is one lucky game deserves another because the Knicks stole a game, game two that they shouldn't have won. The 76ers stole game five that they shouldn't have won because Joel Embiid had 10 turnovers. And I know it said he had a triple-double. He had 19, 16, 10 assists, four blocks and a steal. But baby, that man was playing with some tightness. If you can see me on YouTube, my cheeks, like my facial cheeks, they're like. That man was playing tight. He had a whole lot of turnovers. And it's the weirdest thing, John. It's the weirdest thing because Joel Embiid plays slow and brooding and plotting and all of that. And Tyrese Maxey is skittish. Tyrese Maxey plays really, 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 really fast. So whenever you see like a 76er meltdown, it's usually a combination of one of those two things. That's what happened in game two at the Garden. Like Kyle Lowry, the vet, didn't call timeout. Tyrese Maxey got it. He fell on it. And as opposed to calling timeout, he did something skittish. And the Knicks took advantage of that. That was Dante DiVincenzo's three-pointer at the top of the key. Except last night, Tyrese Maxey was like, Jalen Brunson, I tote that thing too. You know what I mean? That's what he did. He got the first three. I don't care if you travel, y'all. Take y'all refereeing asses on somewhere, right? I don't care. Y'all act like the cops. I see so many people on Twitter, oh my God, he stepped. I don't care. It wasn't egregious. Not in the days of the James Harden step back. No. We're not doing that here, baby. Mitchell Robinson fouled him. And then everybody says, and the reason I asked John, does he watch it as a coach or as a fan? Because everybody assumes foul. Like Charles Barkley last night said it on Inside the NBA. He said, you got to foul. Tyrese Maxey was at half court, y'all. He took a step inside half court. He was literally from the same distance that Steph Curry was at when Steph Curry's double bang in Oklahoma City about 7 or 8 years ago. He was not that far inside the half court line. Mentally, it's just hard. Even though Tibbs is barking from the sidelines, foul. A, it's 20,000 fans there. You might not be able to hear even the crazy man's voice cut through that noise. You play low on the screen. It makes all the sense in the world. You're playing up. Like, he's playing up as far as three-point line. He's not playing up as far as half-court line. And Maxey never took another dribble. He stepped into the three. Sometimes you tip your hat. You know what I think? This is what I think about. Remember LeBron's very first game winner in the NBA playoffs? It was 2009 Eastern Conference Finals, Cavs Magic. And Orlando, I want to say maybe it was Hedo Turkoglu. No, it was Rashard Lewis. Rashard Lewis had hit a wing three to tie the game. Orlando was up 1-0 in the series. This is one of the greatest LeBron playoff series that he's ever played. I think he averaged 38, 8-8, and he lost in six games. But the two games that Cleveland won, LeBron put a stamp on. And somehow, LeBron got open at the top of the key for a clean butt-naked three. And everybody criticized Stan Van Gundy, who was the Orlando coach at the time, for basically the positioning of, maybe it was Michael Petras on the inbounds pass, where it created a line of sight for Mo Williams to throw the ball to LeBron for LeBron to hit that three. And Stan's walking off the floor in the Cavs celebration. And you know what he did? He gave like the pizza guy look. It was like one of them. He just raised his eyebrows. He was like, kind of like, you know what? Great shot. Like, that happens. And I think, John, in this situation, that happens. Tyrese Maxey brought it. That dude scored 40 plus. That dude scored 46. He won a 7-1 run by himself in the Garden. And Garden, don't act like y'all ain't seen that before. Y'all seen Reggie Miller's movies? Right?
That was mean.
What, John, what was it mean, or was it me pointing out history? You pointing out 1999.
No, you're right. It was just mean. Just Knicks fans didn't need to wake up with your fist in their stomach.
Knicks fans are used to be having fists in their stomach. They ain't want to play up. They ain't been worth a damn in about 25 years. That's why they were. That's, look, Tracy Morgan was out here giving Tyrese Maxey the bird. Did you see that?
I did see that. Shout out Tracy Morgan. We love that guy.
That is hilarious.
I saw one thing after the game, not just the foul, but I saw a bunch of people saying that Tibbs screwed up by not calling a timeout afterwards to move the ball up to like half court, set up a play, OTA, all that. I actually kind of agree with not calling the timeout. Like,
you granted, get a chance to set your defense.
Right. And remember, like, Embiid was on fumes. Like, that would have given them a chance to pull him off, put on someone who wasn't on fumes. Like, I think the Knicks had a better chance of scoring against that tired Sixers defense in the last play, even if they had to run the length of the court.
Man, we say football is a game of inches. We say football is complicated, and we give football all the, like, the platitudes for being complicated. You know, we got the telestrator, and we know what we don't know. But I think in basketball, we generally think of, oh, run and jump, go to the basket, blah, blah, blah. We think it's a lot more digestible because it's easier to play when you're by yourself. So therefore, we think, man, why didn't you file there? Why didn't you call a timeout there? Man, that stuff is happening so fast. You have adrenaline going. You have a million different things going on in your head. You're playing a pick and roll with this guy differently compared to a pick and roll with this guy differently. Like, there's a lot more complicated, like, concepts of information that you're going through at a given moment. Like, and John, my group chats were completely blown up. Because one of my friends, one of my close friends says, there's Embiid choking it away again. You know, he's like, I know he hurt, but there you go, choking it away again. And then Tyrese Maxey does it. And you got to think, he's been in this spot with Ben Simmons. He's been in this spot with James Harden. Now he's in a spot with Tyrese Maxey. And here's the other part, John. And not to spin this forward and turn this into offseason basketball, because they've got game six in a couple of nights in Philly, and I don't think that's going to be a New York takeover, right? It's not going to be a New York takeover. But the 76ers got cap space this summer, right? Tobias Harris is coming off. Like, they got some money. Paul George is a free agent this summer. Brandon Ingram could very much be on the outs in New Orleans because of the composition of that roster and how things fit there. They could go get themselves a high-level wing that can use various parts of the floor, that can operate from free throw line to three-point line while you give Embiid his space and you give Maxey his room to go zip-zip to the basket. I'm not saying that Philly can find themselves in some championship fast lane. I'm saying they could find themselves in a very interesting spot once this is over. But this ain't over, right? This series, A, is not over. I still think the Knicks win it, mind you. But this series just got a lot more interesting. And I do think it's fitting, John. I think it's really fitting that Steph got knocked out in the play-in, KD got swept, LeBron got beaten five, and then gave us the wink, wink, nod, nod, I don't know what I'm doing next year. You know, it was like LeBron was waiting on that question. LeBron was waiting on the question, and it wasn't set up. My man, I think his name's Dylan. Dylan from the LA Times was just like, it was a question I would have asked in some form had they gotten to me, but I wasn't in line. I mean, I was in line, but it was like one last question. And LeBron was just waiting on that last question. He was like, man, this is the perfect alley-oop pass for me to walk off of, right? And he said, this your last game as a Laker? And LeBron's eyes just lit up. It was like a cartoon. His eyes just lit up, John. You could just see the twinkle in his eyes. And he was like, yes, this is the perfect cliffhanger for me to walk off on, right? LeBron walks off into the night. He says, you know what? I'm not going to answer that right now. And that's him issuing his edict to the Lakers. And then what happens the next night, John? We got jam-packed games where we're not talking about what LeBron is doing, what Kevin Durant is doing, what Stephen Curry is doing. We are weaning ourselves off of the binky. John, you're a father. I'm not, right? But I've been around kids. And let me tell you, one of the hardest things to do with a kid is to wean they spoiled asses off of the pacifier, off the binky. And that's what the NBA is trying to do right now. And the best way to do that is not with, oh, we got to have more stars, or we got to reminisce on how great all these other guys were. The best way to do that is to have compelling basketball in great venues, night after night after night. And that's what we're having. Even the Bucks series that we're going to talk about later has an element of being compelling to it. Just from a basketball standpoint, Damian Giannis might come back, right? The Cavaliers Magic game that we're going to talk about next. If you're selling your Evan Mobley stock, guess who's buying? Give it to your boy. Give it to your boy. John, you selling your Evan Mobley stock? You selling it?
Not anymore. I'm glad I didn't before. I came close.
I should have pressured you into selling the stock, because I'd have took all of it. But that is the larger point. We've got a great series in the Western Conference coming up, Denver and Minnesota, where you got the MVP and his team, the champions, except they're not playing well against the Minnesota Timberwolves. They've won, this is their second year of actually winning playoff series. They won, they won two playoff series in 2004, and that's it. And then they went out and swept Kevin Durant, and they're with the new face of the league, Anthony Edwards. Like, this is how you build the next level of mythology in the NBA playoffs. This is how you remix it. This is how you move on and you transition to the next generation. Even if the quote unquote numbers don't look great, because people are just going to start warming up to these new storylines, these new venues, these new people. You're giving yourself a ground level baseline thing to start from next year. You're giving yourself a space for, as opposed to the three greatest or three biggest nationally TV teams being Lakers, Warriors, Suns, because that's what they were. You're giving the networks more options to say, let's throw in the Ant-Man. Yeah, you're going to throw in the Knicks anyway. You might wind up throwing on the 76ers anyway. But you're giving yourselves more options. And we got compelling basketball, and it's round one, and I'm tired, and I know y'all tired. Y'all got to be tired. Like, you're not like travel weary tired, but you're tired. This is my favorite time of year. This is where I find out what season the charm do we watching. I don't know what season the charm we watching, but this is what we go to sleep on, and this is what we wake up to. Ah, this is what's going on with Charmed. Cool. I can't believe this, John. Like, no, and then here's the other part. The other element of that game. Jalen Brunson in overtime. You put Nico Batum on him. Nico Batum's long, he old, so he ain't gonna be trying to overreact to stuff. Like, that's the good thing about playing old guys against, you know, some younger guys. Their reaction time ain't that quick, so they ain't falling for the first fake because they ain't see it. You ain't see Jalen Brunson's first fake. Nico Batum's so old, he's reacting to the first fake by the time the second fake happened, but he's in perfect position. Ain't that crazy? Jalen Brunson stepped back, Batum jumps to that left hand, and then you got Jalen Brunson, who, I won't say he panics, it looks like he's about to reset. It looks like he's just trying to give it off to Hartenstein, and Hartenstein is going to give it back. But Hartenstein's cutting to the basket. It goes out of bounds. And when I say, you know, like I said, football's a game of inches. Basketball sometimes is a game of mistakes. Missed free throws, turnovers. Like, those are the things that when you think about, like, you know, Karl Malone missing free throws, right? Like, stuff like that. There's always some element of the door opening. Go ahead. What you got, John?
Yeah. And like, to your point, like, what makes basketball complicated is not like the one-on-one stuff is where it looks easy. The five-on-five stuff is where it gets complicated, because if you're in rhythm with your teammates and you're all thinking the same thing at the same time, it's such a big advantage. So, Vinny, you know as well as I do, you're taught this at a very, very young age. One of the worst things you can do as a shooter, a perimeter shooter, is to shoot the ball when none of your teammates are under the hoop, because it gives your team no chance to get an offensive rebound. I don't think Hartenstein was cutting to the basket. I think he was going for the offensive rebound.
He was not cutting for a pass. Like, he was just going to get himself in position for the rebound. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So if you're in perfect chemistry, Brunson's going through on the shot, going, even if it doesn't go in, one of my guys is going to get it. But he's going up with the shot, going, it's a bad shot. I got to get out of this. And Hartenstein's already going for the offensive rebound. And that's what makes basketball complicated, is five guys have to be thinking the same thing at the same time. Otherwise, you're throwing the ball into the crowd.
So, if I'm going to say Joel Embiid got a little tight, did Jalen Brunson get a little tight, John? Do you think his cheeks went? Do you think that's what happened, John?
I think Brunson and Embiid had a very similar issue, which is playing 50 plus minutes of high level NBA playoffs basketball, especially doing it kind of night after night after night. And Embiid, you know, is still coming back from being off for a while, injury and all that. But Brunson's been doing this for months, and that doesn't mean it's easier for him. That means it's harder for him, because that man is tired. So, yeah, I think him and Embiid had a similar problem. I don't know if it's as much they got tight as much as they got so tired that they started making tired mistakes.
That's an excellent point. You are giving a lot of grace, as you should, right? And I don't want to make it seem like I'm not giving Joel Embiid all the grace, because he probably shouldn't be out there. If this were a regular season game with the way that he's moving, he probably wouldn't be out there. The 76ers played 8 guys last night, and one of them was Paul Reed, who played a grand total of 3 minutes. The Knicks played 7 guys, which just makes it, you know, December. You know what I mean? Like, it's not really a whole lot of difference there.
Vinny, they might only have 7 guys at this point.
Yeah, you're probably right. But Brunson had an excellent game. Hart and Ananobi was so good defensively. Like, if you go and look at some of those Embiid turnovers, OG Ananobi was somewhere near the ball. Like, it's just amazing the level of detail. Both teams know each other. I want to stress this so tough. After game 3 of a playoff series, there's nothing new that teams know about each other. Nothing new. You go from being a couple that just met each other to an old married couple by game 3. You are in full married couple mode. You know each other's scent. You know where you're going to move. You're probably in a spot where you're telling, hey, man, you're supposed to hedge right here. You're supposed to you're supposed to flip the screen here. I'm trying to help you out here. You're going to flip the screen. I'm going to play a little bit high. They're going to reverse it. Like, you're in this dance. That's where we're at now in the playoffs. And now we're going to game 6 in Philly? You go, John, the love doctor. It's been what minute since the love doctor has, like, courted, right? But that's what game 1 and games 2 is. The courting period. Getting to know each other. You go from courting to being in a full-blown, I can't stand your ass relationship by game 4. And now we go into game 6. I love it. I swear, John, I am so enthralled with how this series is going to flip and turn. I'm very curious if Philadelphia is going to show up for game 6. And I don't mean the 76ers. I mean the Philadelphia 76er fans. Are y'all going to let the Knicks take over y'all building 2 times? Just saying. Philly fans get this reputation of being some of the greatest sports fans in the world. And y'all let the Knicks fans come ride on the Acela or drive up, 2.5 hours or whatever it is, and take over y'all building. And chatting FNB and all this other stuff. Hey, man, back in the day, them fighting words, they ain't going to be in your concourse talking about your dude like that. But after the game, who knows? After game 4, John, it might have been some Philly fans mixed in there saying that chant, FNB. You know what I mean? It might not have been all Knicks fans. It might have been some mad 76er fans, right? Who knows? And then there was the other game, early game last night, John. Right, there was the NBA TV game that had Gus Johnson on the call. Like, we all love Gus Johnson around these parts. Maybe, should have asked Gus Johnson to be on the podcast.
Let's
try to figure that one out.
He's
a Detroit guy. The West Side Detroit guy. I'm from the East Side. We kick it a little different. But without Jared Allen, my man Evan Mobley, blocking everything in sight, altering everything in sight, dunking on people, Donovan Mitchell showing up, right? Like, this is a big series for Donovan Mitchell because it is he going to go for an extension? Is he not? And if he's not going to go for the extension, that means you got to trade him. And if the Cavaliers don't get out of the first round with Donovan Mitchell, you can see why the Cavaliers have said it was worth the risk, but it did not pay off the way that we wanted it to pay off. It brought us a level of credibility, but it did not help us ascend competitively. But Donovan Mitchell brought it last night. He brought it in the second half. It was Donovan Mitchell versus Paolo Banchero. Like, something just mano y mano. Paolo Banchero, a dude. Like, he looked like an element of, like, baby Carmelo out there with some of the shots and some of the moves that he had last night. Like, I like that. Once again, that's a series. That's a game 5. That's a series of 2 teams that you ain't going to scheme nobody open. You're not scheming anything by game 5. You know, there's maybe a trick or two that you got, But at this point, it comes down to execution. It comes down to, is my guy better than your guy? So that's why you saw Paolo Banchero being Orlando's guy, Donovan Mitchell being Cleveland's guy, and then Evan Mobley saying, this is why they call me Slim Duncan. You know what I mean? But you can't have the Wagner boys putting you under the rim. You can't be that light in the pants. You know what I mean? Evan Mobley's going to have to put on some weight. But man, that it was a hell of a block. That was a hell of a block that he had on Wagner. Even though Wagner put it in his face, he put it in, you know, right hand on the left-hand side. Maybe he should have went up with his left hand. Maybe he should just try to throw his body into Mobley. But remember, Mobley is a guy, one of the top defensive players in the league. He wasn't high. He probably won't be high in the defensive player to your voting this year like he was last year. Last year he was a finalist. This year he was not. And Mobley was also the dude that was shutting off Paolo Banchero's water.
All over the floor, by the way. Like, Paolo would pull him out to the three-point line. Mobley was comfortable playing him as a perimeter defender. Paolo wanted to bring him to the mid-range. Mobley had his hand in Paolo's face every shot. You want to bring him down low, post him up because he's a little skinny, he's going to fight you. And this is what I liked about Mobley. And I think I've said this on this podcast before. Every time I've watched Evan Mobley before this game, I've been like, I see the skill, but I don't see the intensity. Mm. And I think that's part of why the Tim Duncan comparison pops up so often, is Tim Duncan was a great player, but you never saw the intensity. Last night, I saw Mobley throughout the game. He went from trying to like put the ball in the basket to I have to dunk through somebody to make sure this is going in. And instead of I'm going to try and hit the ball out of his hand and cause a block, I'm going to smash this ball against the backboard to make sure that it happens. And that's like, that's just playoff intensity. You realize everyone's going 100% and you need to give 100% as much as you can. And when I saw him doing that, and granted, I actually think they've always shied away from playing him at center. They're like, mm-hmm. he's a power mm-hmm. forward, which mm-hmm. the Spurs used to do all the time with Tim Duncan. But I liked him as the rangy center who can go everywhere. But yeah, he needs a little bit more muscle on his body just so he can take some of the bigger guys in the post. But I just liked that intensity from him. Of every play he was making, at least in the second half, he was making entirely, completely, with every ounce of effort he had. That's a different player than the guy I've seen before.
The playoffs bring it out of you, man. The playoffs bring it, it shows you something. And now stick a pin in that. John, I'm going to send John a picture. Because I don't think John has seen Tim Duncan right lately.
I have. That man has gotten back into his island roots.
Oh, you have seen Tim Duncan lately.
Look, that is some beautiful hair. I wish he had played with that hair, but that is some beautiful hair that man's got.
Hey, look, if y'all haven't seen it, we're going to, you know what? If you're on YouTube, John is Tim Duncan today. John is going to be Tim Duncan today for those watching the show on YouTube. And you will see it. Like maybe that'll be like the cover of the show on when we post it on Twitter, so people can see Tim Duncan what he looks like now. That I'm just telling you, if we had known that Tim Duncan existed back in the day, do you know how much more fun we would have had with Tim Duncan? Remember, Tim Duncan used to do like Sprite commercials. That fits right in with the Sprite aesthetic. Are you kidding me? Remember, Tim Duncan used to be a Nike athlete. He had the Tonal Foamposite Max shoes that looked like the spaceships. It was like around the looks of the Foamposites, the Penny Foamposites. Tim had a Foamposite Max shoe like that was made for big man. Nike would have had a field day with Rastafari and Tim Duncan. Are you kidding me? Now, David Robinson might have been like, hey, young fella, I don't know. This is what we're doing around here. But Steven Jackson, Captain Jack would have had some fun with Tim Duncan. Maybe, and you know what's funny? Don Nelson would have traded for Tim Duncan if he could have, if he'd seen or known that this Tim Duncan existed. Oh my God, that's so fun.
Yeah, If Tim didn't go to school at Wake Forest and play his entire NBA career with the San Antonio Spurs, maybe we would have seen some of that Tim Duncan and less of the, you know, guy who works at the office with you. He's got the cubicle down the hallway, Tim Duncan. But I want to bring it back to Cavs Magic real quick.
Okay.
I really enjoy the prospect of this Magic team, and I like the defense they play. It's really good. But who was the team the other day? Was it the Suns? We were talking about how the Suns are a team that when you watch them, you're like, they desperately need a point guard.
I know where you're going.
The Magic can get by a little bit with Paolo kind of playing big point guard, like he's LeBron, like he's Luka. But they would be so much better if they didn't have to. And Paolo would be so much better if he didn't have to. And I think they just drafted two point guards in this last draft, maybe both in the first round. And I understand that like it was really important for them to win as many regular season games as possible. But I wish they had spent more time. Anthony Black's one of them. Is Jet Howard the other one that they got? I would have liked if they could have gotten to the playoffs with one of those two guys ready to play big playoff minutes, because Markel Fultz is trying his best, but he's just not it.
Yeah, Markel Fultz. Yeah, Jet Howard can play big guard, but he's more 2-3 than 1-2.
So Anthony Black is the guy who's the point guard.
Anthony Black is the guy, and clearly Jamal Mosley does not trust Markel Fultz. And a quick point on Paolo before we go. Remember how we talk about everything's being like switchable basketball, right? And I've railed against automatic switching. Maybe I haven't done it on this podcast, but in general, whenever I'm watching ball as a fan or as a coach, why are you giving up the easy switch? Evan Mobley wasn't giving him no easy switch last night. When he was on Paolo, he was like, hey man, move out the way. I got him. I'm not letting this screen get me off. And it was like a cornerback who travels. You know what I mean? Like a cornerback who's like, hey, I'm on this guy. If he's in the slot, I'm there. If he's wide out, I'm there. If he's at the X or at the Y, I'm there. I'm there. I love that. Sometimes, John, sometimes if a dude send a limo for you, you gotta sit in that limo and make sure when you get out that joint that dude don't embarrass you. That's all. But when we come back, we're going to take a quick break. I have a theory that I'm going to run by John on my man Doc. You're listening to The Good Word. Welcome back to The Good Word. John, I had no doubt in my mind that the Bucks were going to win last night. 115-92 in Milwaukee. Bobby Portis was back after his, shall we say, kerfluffle that they ruled two altercations. I thought it was one altercation. I thought the second one was kind of weak. You know, like if someone's, you know, look, man, running up on Bobby Portis is not the smartest thing to do in the world, y'all. I'm not saying you should act like a punk around Bobby Portis. I'm just saying running up on him in a short space at a fast rate of speed will not work out well for you. And he actually used some restraint, because we've seen what happens when my man Bobby does not use restraint. That led to him being out for game four, which meant that he was going to be on fire in game five. And that's what he was, 29-10, right? Middleton bringing it again on that gimpy ankle. Another 29-12. Pat Bev, who one of my friends said in a group chat, John, all he does is talk shit and foul. And you know what I said? He think he me, right?
Wasn't that the wasn't that Russell Westbrook's thing? Pat Bev has y'all fooled.
He got y'all fooled.
All he does is foul.
All he does is foul. That's like Kendrick. Like, hey man, y'all don't see that Drake's Drake is a fraud.
I almost texted you about that yesterday.
Oh, that song was on repeat yesterday, dog. That song was on repeat. I was like, oh, he said what? It wasn't even let me rewind and then go back. It was like, oh, you don't know nothing about that. You don't know nothing about that. I'm like, oh, you know nothing about that. You don't know nothing about that either. I was like, oh, yes, this is what I'm here for. Beef.
Love a good rap beef. You signed by a guy who signed by a guy who signed by that guy.
Hey, this is the basketball equivalent of take your matchup. We ain't doing no switching today, dog. You are going to come eat this 40.
But let's defend Pat Bev because he did more than just foul and talk.
He did. And this is my Doc Rivers theory. You give Doc some stars, you might come up short. You give Doc some tryhards, Doc is going to motivate the hell out of those dudes. Doc probably gave the best pregame speech in the history of the Milwaukee Bucks yesterday because those dudes came out on fire. You give Doc Rivers a set of underachieving dudes that everybody thinks can't play, like the Clippers team he had before Paul George and Kawhi Leonard came over there, like after Blake Griffin and CP, but before, like in that little small period. It might have only been a year. Remember Pat Bev was on that team, and they got a couple games off of Golden State.
This is the Lou Williams and what's that other guy's name? He won Sixth Man of the Year, didn't he?
Eric Gordon?
No, big guy. The undersized big guy. He was crazy. It's nothing but energy. You're talking about the team before
Montrezl Harrell.
That's the one. Thank you.
Before he became Lemon Pepper Lou. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You give him some tryhards. Like, I don't know if the Bucks even got six good players without Dame and Giannis. Right? But Doc had those dudes playing last night. I've seen this before. Doc with Orlando, some tryhards. Towards the end with Boston, believe it or not, those dudes were more tryhards than like the Juggernauts. KG on a gimpy leg. This is more of a Rondo sort of team. That team that made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, game seven against the Miami Heat that had the 3-2 lead, that was a tryhard team. That was a team that should not have been in the Eastern Conference Finals. That team was old, but Doc had done a great job of coaching that team and getting what he could out of them. They had went to seven games with the Philadelphia 76ers of Evan Turner that year and then took the LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Miami Heat team to seven games and had a 3-2 lead before LeBron went into Boston and crushed the buildings. Like Snoop Dogg, if we going to continue with the rap beef analogies here. But you give Doc Rivers a team, a good enough playoff team, but a team that nobody expects anything from, a team that you expect to get stomped on because they don't have the talent, he gonna pull some work out of his ass. And that's what they did last night. And now you're going to game six in Indy. And Indy played like a team that had game six in his back pocket. They played like a youthful team that believed that they didn't have a chance, that they didn't need to close out the Bucks on their own floor in game five because we can just go home and do it. And what happens if, wait a minute, that's Damian Lillard's music. That's Giannis Antetokounmpo's music. You know what I mean? Now, I don't know if Giannis was a wrestler, you know, what his theme music would be. But I feel like with Dame, you can definitely put that to Stone Cold Steve Austin's Breaking the Glass. You know what I mean? I don't know about Giannis, though. I had to think about that one.
Is Giannis the Big Show?
Giannis is smoother than the Big Show.
I mean, but he's just a big dude.
Yeah, you gotta give Giannis a little more swag than the Big Show. Because people used to make fun of the Big Show. You ain't making fun of Giannis on the mic. I ain't saying he's the Rock, but you ain't making fun of Giannis.
It's fair.
I mean, there is a wrestler, and John's going to cut this out. Yeah, wouldn't that work? Wouldn't that work as Giannis's music, John?
Yes.
He'd have like the cane and the hat. And the accessories coming down the ring, you know what I mean? Like, that would actually work, right? But to the point, game six in Indy, because Doc seemed to open the door. He said they're really, 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 really close. I'm like, oh, you know something we don't. And I bet you Doc said this to his team. He said, if you get me through game five, these guys will be here for game six. And that's another reason why those guys went out and played like they did. They probably know to some degree, we probably can't replicate this type of effort on the road in a hostile environment, but we can get you this one.
Yeah, I want to, I don't hate your doc theory. And I want to go back to a thing you said earlier in the podcast where you were saying by game three, teams really know each other. There's nothing new for them to learn, right? Sometimes that's not the case because sometimes you've seen more than one version of the team. The Mavericks have seen two versions of the Clippers. Mm. They've seen the Clippers with Kawhi and the Clippers without Kawhi. Mm. And they've had to learn both versions of that team. Mm. The Pacers have seen the Bucks with Dame, no Giannis. They've seen them without Dame, without Giannis, and without Bobby Portis when he got ejected. And last night they saw no Dame, no Giannis, but Bobby Portis is in. Chris Middleton looked like he was a little bit more spry in game four than he was in game three. So every game they're getting a slightly different version of the Bucks. So they don't exactly know what's coming for them yet. And I think that helped out Doc a lot just by just mixing it up, going, you don't know what's coming because you haven't seen this version of this team yet. And while the opposite version of your theory would, or the opposite viewpoint of your theory would be Giannis and Dame coming back to the Bucks might not be good for Doc and the Bucks, I think it would be, at least in this series, because the Pacers haven't really seen that look in this series yet.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And speaking of Mavs Clippers, pivotal game five. We're going from like these different code words that we use. Game five is the pivotal game five. Game six is the stave, like stave off elimination. You know what I mean? We're heading towards that. That's how you know we're in full playoff mode. We're entering into staving off elimination. We're heading into like the make or break game five. Those stats where it says 85% of the winner of game five wins the series. All that stuff. That's why I love this time of year. Mavs, Clippers, game five. Tonight, both teams have won on each other's home floor, so there's no mental block about that. Kawhi Leonard has already been ruled out, which means Paul George, James Harden, do your thing, which means Russell Westbrook, we need good Russ tonight. Like, when Russell Westbrook is good, you can see it. When he's bad, John, it's like he's playing for the other team. It's like his mind is going so fast that you don't think he's thinking. His mind is going so fast, you don't think that he's playing with any veteran savvy.
Yeah, I was thinking earlier when you were mentioning how fast and frenetic Tyrese Maxey plays, that there are these players scattered around the league that play really, really fast, and they can change a game with their speed and how fast they play, but they can also completely screw your team up. I'm actually thinking about Jose Alvarado in the series against the Thunder. Like, every time he came in, you were like, I see how this could work, but he's just going too fast. He's too out of control. It doesn't work. And you're right. Russ does that sometimes, especially now that he's a veteran. I think like 30% of the time he can show up and just be way too out of control. Mm-hmm. But 70% of the time, he is a very valuable player who I would argue maybe has actually won the Clippers a game in this series already.
Yeah, and luckily, he hasn't cost them too much. But that's the variant. And with Kawhi Leonard out, you got to take the chance because you don't have that many roads where you can actually, you know, win a game. So that's where we're at. This is when I tell you, like, this series is really compelling. Like, John, let me ask you this, because let me put on your Dallas Mavericks fan hat right now.
Yep.
Where is your confidence with what you've seen in game four, with what you expect to see in game five, and then knowing, hey, man, is Luka hurt? Or does Luka just look like he's dragging his leg around at all times?
I think Luka's been hurt for the better part of a month. I mean, the last couple of weeks of the season, every time he played, once you got to around the second half, his knees would be bleeding. Both of his knees would be bleeding through his leg sleeves that he wears. I don't know what the heck causes that, but he's been having knee issues since then. It's obviously kind of bothering him in this series. There's two easy ways right up front to know how this game is going to go. One, are the Mavericks blown off the floor in the first quarter? Because in the two games they lost, they were down by 12 after the first quarter in game one. They were down by 23 after the first quarter in game four. And like, yeah, they got both of those games back close again, but they had to use so much energy to get back close that they just didn't have as much left in the gas tank at the end of it. So if they can keep it close in the first quarter, that's good for them. But also, Luka is shooting like crap. And he's shooting 26% from the three-point line. And I don't have it in front of me, but I would wager to say he's shooting about 9 threes a game. So if the guy is going to take the bulk of your team's three-point shots, he has to shoot better than 26%. And during the regular season, he shot 38% from three. So if Luka can start knocking down the threes and not go 1-for-8, 1-for-9, 2-for-10, whatever he's been doing, that's going to help them, and it's going to make it very difficult for the Clippers to beat them.
John, I'll do you one better. He's shooting 26% on 12 threes a night.
Oh, I said 9. I was under.
You were shorting him. You were not giving him his proper etiquette. Meanwhile, Kyrie Irving,
48%.
Hey, y'all, if Kevin Durant had paired with this version of Kyrie Irving, we'd be talking about a much different version of Kevin Durant and a much different version of everything that we've had over the last 4 or 5 years. Because this dude has been incredible. And if it's one dude that knows Kyrie Irving's playoff exploits, it's the coach on the other end, Tyronn Lue. And he can't do anything with him. This is one of those, look, all we need sometimes is like two good 7-game series, like one on each side of the bracket. We might get two. We might get Bucks Pacers. We might get Cavs Magic. And then we might get Knicks 76ers going 7. Like, this is shaping up to be a pretty compelling first round. Remember the first weekend, all the home teams were winning and people was complaining. And now, like, we're fully into it. This is what playoff basketball is. I'm going to finish where I started. This is what playoff basketball is. It's ugly. It gets a little grindy. You got your injuries because we ask for more physical basketball. And when you ask for more physical basketball, there's the chance that somebody's going to get hurt. And you've had, you know, Miami with Jimmy Butler. You really feel, you know, weird about that one because you felt like a full-ish Miami Heat team could do some damage against the Boston Celtics. Because I don't know about you, I'm not really impressed. And then Porzingis is out for the next several games with his injury. They may not need him next round if it's, you know, whatever, Magic or Cavs, but you want to have him there. So it's such an interesting spot. Like, and if I'm the Heat, I'm looking around and I'm like, this would be the perfect year for Miami to come back in and do some real damage. But they can't because they're not whole. So this is playoff basketball. I love it. I hope you guys enjoy the games this weekend. I'll be going to Denver for Minnesota, Denver. I'll be there for that. That will be a very, very fun series. And that is all that we have for you on today's episode of The Good Word. Thanks to producer John and the entire team who works hard behind the scenes on this show. Stick around for No Cap Room tomorrow. And Monday, I'll be back with another episode of The Good Word. We will be reviewing, previewing, talking more. We're going to have some fun. Playoff basketball. Get some sleep, y'all.